KOA1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Anna Mateo, and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present The Black Cat by Edgar Allan Poe on American Stories. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
The New York City restaurant, 11 Madison Park, is one of the best in the world. It has 3 Michelin stars. There are about 130 restaurants in the world with 3 stars from the famous French guide. A meal at 11 Madison Park for 2 people with wine costs about $1,000. And when the restaurant reopens on June 10th, after the year-long pandemic, it will not serve meat, fish, or other animal products. Owner and chef Daniel Hume recently told the U.S. radio broadcaster NPR that the restaurant will be 100% plant-based. He said the way people eat meat is not sustainable, and that is not an opinion. This is just a fact. Hume also said he will not serve butter or cheese. He will, however, offer honey and milk to go with tea and coffee. Epicurious is a website that centers on food and cooking. In late April, the site announced that it will not write about beef or cooking instructions for meals with beef. The move, it said, is an effort to encourage more sustainable cooking. Raising cows for beef, the site said, led to more greenhouse gas than feeding other animals or planting vegetables for food. Researchers at Tulane University in New Orleans, Louisiana, agree. In a 2019 study, they wrote that food production causes about 25% of the world's carbon pollution. They suggested that if Americans would eat chicken instead of beef for just one meal per day, they could reduce pollution by about half. The question is, will other restaurants follow in the footsteps of a famous place like 11 Madison Park? Nevin Martell is a food writer in Washington, D.C. He told VOA that 11 Madison Park is special.
They've always done things a little bit differently. And I think that this is a big, bold move for them. But I also think that they're positioning themselves at the right time to be doing the right thing. And I don't think it's as much of a risk as people might think that it is.
Martell added that people do not come to 11 Madison Park to eat meat. They come for a once-in-a-lifetime experience. He does not think the change will keep people from coming to the restaurant. Haidar Karum is the chef at Chloe, a Washington, D.C. restaurant. The restaurant serves meat, chicken, fish, and vegetables based on what items are available in different times of the year. Recently, he said customers have been more interested in vegetables.
Vegetarian dishes have become far more popular than they were, let's say, 10 years ago. So because of that, because of customer demand and just for the sake that I actually like cooking vegetarian things, if you look at the menu, you'll find a lot of options for vegetables.
But that does not mean he could make Chloe's menu vegetarian overnight. 11 Madison Park can, Karum said, because the New York restaurant is so famous that people are willing to travel the world just to eat in the restaurant, regardless of the cuisine. Karum feels he has some responsibility to help the environment. He works with a cheesemaker in Pennsylvania, about 2 hours from Washington, to transport cheese, apples, pork, and honey from different places to the restaurant. That helps reduce the amount of pollution Chloe adds to the environment. Even if restaurants cannot change their offerings completely, like 11 Madison Park, Martel suggests that they can still find ways to reduce their pollution and waste. Increase meatless and vegetarian offerings. It's something people are more and more interested in and willing to pay more money for, he said. Rethink takeout. The takeout culture that expanded during the pandemic has an outsized environmental impact, Martel said. Make sure diners know what steps are being taken to reduce pollution and waste. If you can communicate the programs you've put in place, some diners will appreciate it, and some diners will pay more for it because they'll feel good about themselves when they are at the restaurant. Almost 1.5 years into the coronavirus pandemic, most restaurants are just trying to stay in business. As a result, Martel said, reopening a place that people have been craving for 14 months and then not giving them what they've wanted for 14 months is also a tough thing to ask of a restaurateur. I'm Dan Friedel.
Recent study of Earth's closest planetary neighbor has provided new understanding about Venus. Recently, scientists gathered data about Venus by bouncing radio waves off the planet. The study measured the tilt of the Venusian axis and size of the planet's center, or core. It also studied the planet turning. All this data is giving a deeper understanding of the strange planet sometimes called Earth's evil twin. It was already known that Venus has the longest day. The time the planet takes for one full turn, or rotation, on its axis is longer than any other planet in our solar system. However, some earlier estimates were not completely correct. The study found that a single Venusian rotation takes about 243 Earth days. That means a day on Venus lasts longer than a year on Earth. Scientists also say that Venus makes a complete orbit around the Sun in 225 Earth days. The researchers sent radio waves toward Venus 21 times from 2006 to 2020 from NASA's Goldstone antenna in the Mojave Desert of California. Then they studied the radio echo, the sound that traveled back to two places on Earth, Goldstone and at the Green Bank Observatory in West Virginia. Jean-Luc Margot is a planetary astronomy professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. He led the study. The findings were published online by Nature Astronomy. He said the radio waves lit up Venus with a huge flashlight. The scientists then observed the reflections as they came back to Earth. Margot praised Venus as an excellent laboratory for understanding how planets are formed and how they change. There are likely billions of Venus-like planets in the galaxy, he said. The new data showed that the Venusian planetary core is about 7,000 kilometers across. That is similar in size to the Earth's core. Earlier estimates of Venus's core were based on computer modeling rather than observational data. Its core is very likely made of iron and nickel. However, Margot said that it is unclear whether the core is solid or liquid. Venus, the second planet from the Sun, is similar in structure but slightly smaller than Earth. The planet is about 12,000 kilometers wide. Its poisonous atmosphere is mainly made up of carbon dioxide, with clouds of sulfuric acid. This creates a greenhouse effect, so its surface temperatures can reach 471 degrees Celsius. That is hot enough to melt lead. Venus turns on its axis, almost upright. This means it lacks separate seasons. The Earth has more of a tilt. The study found that the Venusian tilt is about 2.64 degrees. Earth's is about 23.5 degrees. Venus turns from east to west. This is the opposite direction from all other planets in our solar system, except Uranus. Here is another strange thing about Venus. The time between sunrises, as opposed to the length of a single axial turn, takes 117 Earth days. This is because Venus rotates in the direction opposite of its orbit around the Sun. Venus has received less attention than Mars, Earth's other planetary next-door neighbor, and other places in the solar system. Margot said this extreme lack of data about Venus has led to an extreme lack of understanding. There have been no NASA missions to Venus in almost 30 years, and about a dozen NASA missions to Mars in this time, Margot said. He added that the new findings on how Venus turns could help any future landing attempts. I'm Ana Mateo.
Tony from China writes, "Hi, I am an English learner from China. I want to know the difference between when and while. Thanks." Dear Tony, this is a very interesting question because both words are what grammar experts call subordinating conjunctions. That means we use them to connect subordinating clauses to the main clause of a sentence. A subordinating clause is a part of a sentence that adds additional information to the main clause. Here is an example. I read Tony's email when I started work today. The main clause is I read Tony's email. The additional information is when I started work today. The subordinating conjunction when tells us that the time of the second event was almost at the same time or very close to the time of the first event. Note that both these actions, start and read, are single actions, using verbs in the simple past tense. That is an important thing to remember as we look for the difference between when and while. Now look at this example. While I was making lunch, the phone rang. Here, the first action is in the present continuous tense. That means the action, making lunch, took place over a period of time. The main clause, the phone rang, is in the simple past tense, and it is a single action taking place at a point in time. The order of the events in a sentence with subordinating conjunctions can affect the choice of when or while. If we change the order of our example above, we get, when the phone rang, I was making lunch. Here, the conjunction when is in the clause with the single action, the phone rang. So as a general rule, you should use while in a clause with a continuous action, using a verb in a continuous tense. Use when in a clause with a single action, using a simple past or present tense. If you have a question for our staff of teachers, send it by email to learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
The Black Cat. Tomorrow I die. Tomorrow I die. And today I want to tell the world what happened, and thus perhaps free my soul from the horrible weight which lies upon it. But listen. Listen, and you shall hear how I have been destroyed. When I was a child, I had a natural goodness of soul which led me to love animals, all kinds of animals, but especially those animals we call pets, animals which have learned to live with men and share their homes with them. There is something in the love of these animals which speaks directly to the heart of the man who has learned from experience how uncertain and changeable is the love of other men. I was quite young when I married. You will understand the joy I felt to find that my wife shared with me my love for animals. Quickly she got for us several pets of the most likable kind. We had birds, some goldfish, a fine dog, and a cat. The cat was a beautiful animal, of unusually large size and entirely black. I named the cat Pluto, and it was the pet I liked best. I alone fed it, and it followed me all around the house. It was even with difficulty that I stopped it from following me through the streets. Our friendship lasted in this manner for several years, during which, however, my own character became greatly changed. I began to drink too much wine and other strong drinks. As the days passed, I became less loving in my manner. I became quick to anger. I forgot how to smile and laugh. My wife, yes, and my pets too, all except the cat, were made to feel the change in my character. One night I came home quite late from the inn where I now spent more and more time drinking. Walking with uncertain step, I made my way with effort into the house. As I entered, I saw, or thought I saw, that Pluto the cat was trying to stay out of my way, to avoid me. This action by an animal which I had thought still loved me made me angry beyond reason. My soul seemed to fly from my body. I took a small knife out of my coat and opened it. Then I took the poor animal by the neck, and with one quick movement I cut out one of its fear-filled eyes. Slowly the cat got well. The hole where its eye had been was not a pretty thing to look at, it's true, but the cat no longer appeared to suffer any pain. As might be expected, however, it ran from me in fear whenever I came near. Why should it not run? Yet this did not fail to anger me. I felt growing inside myself a new feeling. Who has not 100 times found himself doing wrong, some evil thing, for no other reason than because he knows he should not? Are not we humans at all times pushed, ever driven in some unknown way, to break the law just because we understand it to be the law? One day, in cold blood, I tied a strong rope around the cat's neck, and taking it down to the cellar under the house, I hung it from one of the wood beams above my head. I hung it there until it was dead. I hung it there with tears in my eyes. I hung it there because I knew it had loved me, because I felt it had given me no reason to hurt it, because I knew that my doing so was a wrong so great, a sin so deadly, that it would place my soul forever outside the reach of the love of God. That same night, as I lay sleeping, I heard through my open window the cries of our neighbors. I jumped from my bed and found that the entire house was filled with fire. It was only with great difficulty that my wife and I escaped. And when we were out of the house, all we could do was stand and watch it burn to the ground. I thought of the cat as I watched it burn, the cat whose dead body I had left hanging in the cellar. It seemed almost that the cat had, in some mysterious way, caused the house to burn, so that it could make me pay for my evil act, so that it could take revenge upon me. Months went by, and I could not drive the thought of the cat out of my mind. One night I sat in the inn drinking as usual. In the corner I saw a dark object that I had not seen before. I went over to see what it could be. It was a cat. A cat almost exactly like Pluto. I touched it with my hand and petted it, passing my hand softly along its back. The cat rose and pushed its back against my hand. Suddenly, I realized that I wanted the cat. I offered to buy it from the innkeeper, but he claimed he had never seen the animal before. As I left the inn, it followed me, and I allowed it to do so. It soon became a pet of both my wife and myself. The morning after I brought it home, however, I discovered that this cat, like Pluto, had only one eye. How was it possible that I had not noticed this the night before? This fact only made my wife love the cat even more, but I myself found a feeling of dislike growing in me. My growing dislike of the animal only seemed to increase its love for me. It followed me everywhere, always. When I sat, it lay down under my chair. When I stood up, it got between my feet and nearly made me fall. Wherever I went, it was always there. At night, I dreamed of it, and I began to hate that cat. One day, my wife called to me from the cellar of the old building where we were now forced to live. As I went down the stairs, the cat, following me as always, ran under my feet and nearly threw me down. In sudden anger, I took a knife and struck wildly at the cat. Quickly my wife put out her hand and stopped my arm. This only increased my anger, and without thinking, I turned and put the knife's point deep into her heart, and she fell to the floor and died without a sound. I spent a few moments looking for the cat, but it was gone. And I had other things to do, for I knew I must do something with the body, and quickly. Suddenly I noted a place in the wall of the cellar, where stones had been added to the wall to cover an old fireplace which was no longer wanted. The walls were not very strongly built, and I found I could easily take down those stones. Behind them there was, as I knew there must be, a hole just big enough to hold the body. With much effort, I put the body in and carefully put the stones back in their place. I was pleased to see that it was quite impossible for anyone to know that a single stone had been moved. Days passed. Still there was no cat. A few people came and asked about my wife, but I answered them easily. Then one day several officers of the police came. Certain that they would find nothing, I asked them in and went with them as they searched. Finally they searched the cellar from end to end. I watched them quietly, and as I expected, they noticed nothing. But as they started up the stairs again, I felt myself driven by some unknown inner force to let them know, to make them know, that I had won the battle. The walls of this building, I said, are very strongly built. It is a fine old house. And as I spoke, I struck with my stick the very place in the wall behind which was the body of my wife. Immediately, I felt a cold feeling up and down my back as we heard coming out of the wall itself a horrible cry. For one short moment the officers stood looking at each other. Then quickly they began to pick at the stones, and in a short time they saw before them the body of my wife, black with dried blood and smelling of decay. On the body's head, its one eye filled with fire, its wide open mouth the color of blood, sat the cat, crying out its revenge.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.